moto spiritosa. As usual, we'll start with an introduction from members of staff and from members of parliament, after which we will immediately get into the business of the day, which did get a very long list of all those questions, and then I did then compile that list and distribute it to members of parliament because they were from different people within the committee, of which I think that maybe some of this question then will be responded to when we get the report. And if not, then you'll get an opportunity of asking direct from the SAPS management. And then before that, let me also then introduce to, just inform members of the portfolio committee that the meeting that we're supposed to have on Friday, we are only going to have that meeting tomorrow at 12:30. I'm from a meeting, and then the sitting for tomorrow has been suspended. So that means we are free tomorrow afternoon, immediately after our different party caucuses. 12:30, we start with the meeting of the ICD, because there is no other day that we can do it if we don't do it tomorrow. We must finish with all the hearings before next week, Wednesday. So we'll be adopting the report of the committee for the term. So then we have decided that instead of us having a meeting on the 16th, which is Friday, the meeting will be tomorrow at 12:30. I'm sure that by 5:00 or 4:00 when we finish, then members then can go back to their provinces for the constituency day, which is Friday. And please, members, because the last meeting that we had on a Friday, we had only ANC members in that meeting. Can I plead with members from other parties to be part of the portfolio committee meetings? It seems as if it becomes the norm that in each and every portfolio committee meeting that is held on certain days, then it's certain people. I think this last Friday, at least we had the DA with us, and then before that, it was only the ANC when we dealt with the ICD before the meeting of the last week Friday. Last week Friday, it was a meeting which went beyond time, agreed time, but I also would like to thank those members who stood with us until that time. And please, let's do the same. Let's try our best not to have more department people coming from the department than members of parliament. Let members of parliament be part of this meeting. Thank you very much. By so saying, then I will give over to members of parliament. Let me start with members of parliament first. After which, then we'll give over to a national commissioner to introduce his team.
My name is Sam Mawote from the Western Cape.
I'm Dumisile Nkanyetha from Mpumalanga, Whip of the Committee.
Diane Kolobana from KwaZulu-Natal.
Mel Suziane, Limpopo.
Steve Moore, Northwest.
Ogumma Sumumle, Limpopo.
Meshwe Gauteng.
Rhino King Basecop.
I'm sure those are all members of parliament. Myself, Makhosi Soweto from the Free State. Then you can introduce yourself. Please do.
I'm Benjamin Tuli from Tswane, the Republic of South Africa.
Yeah. Then let me give over to Comrade Jackie to introduce your team.
Thanks, Madam Chair. On my left, on my right, is Commissioner Praise from Free State. On my left is Commissioner Singh from KwaZulu-Natal. Next to Commissioner Singh is Commissioner Stander from the Northwest.
Northern Cape.
Then next to Commissioner Stander is Commissioner Sheller from the Eastern Cape. Next to him is Commissioner Sohundla from the Eastern Cape. Next to him is Commissioner Munu from Gauteng. Oh, KZN. Monica from the Western Cape.
You know her.
Then Direct Superintendent Stain from Gauteng. And then Commissioner Mayer from Northwest. Then Director Peterson from Gauteng. And Dr. Jacob from Gauteng.
That's the group. And Mr. Skeeter, Assistant Commissioner Skeeter from Gauteng. Divisional Commissioner, sorry, why do I take you down? Divisional Commissioner from Gauteng. And I'm Jackie Sleeby, I'm South African.
We have Ndate Mulusimo from the ministry. Maybe I can give you one of the provinces, you won't mind. Can I give you Princeton, since the people are in minority here?
No, I'm in Limpopo, so thanks.
All right, then without any waste of time, then, Divisional Commissioner Skeeter, can we give over to you for presentation?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we concluded on the AG matters in terms of the presentation at the last meeting, so we will actually have to start with the annual financial statements right now. Firstly, I'm just basically quoting the main aims and objectives again of the annual financial statement, which include obviously financial reporting about the sources and the allocation of financial resources in this regard, and where the resources were used in accordance with a legally adopted budget, including financial limits established by appropriate legislative authorities. Now, the first statement, as we've said previously, is a peculiar statement of the appropriation statement, very applicable to government, and it looks as follows. Firstly, on your left-hand side, the main divisions or programs have been indicated, of which there are five: administration, which is generic, program right to government, visible policing, detective services, crime intelligence, and protection and security services. Members must first note the first column on the left-hand side, where the growth... Firstly, the first column on the left-hand side, which indicates the actual expenditure for the previous financial year, that is 05-06, and the growth were indeed significant in this regard. Then there was also the amount voted, second column from the left-hand side, and the actual amount spent, last column or second last column from the right-hand side in this regard. In program one, signed 10.5 billion. Voted initially and 10.6 billion spent, therefore a virement of 108%, of 108 million, reflecting a virement of 1.03%. Visible policing, 14.3 billion voted, and then 14.021 million spent, reflecting a virement of 2.5%. That is in effect 2.5% of the 14,389 million. Which is actually 368.363 million. Then detective services, 5.2 billion, and voted and actual 5.4 billion spent, an increase, a virement of 1.53317, which reflects 2.9% of the 5.2 billion, therefore an increase. Crime intelligence, 1.1 billion voted, 1.175 billion spent, 4.97% increase, and then protection security program 5, 1.2 billion voters and 1.261 billion spent, 4.23% increase. This is all within the 8% as provided for or allowed for in the Public Finance Management Act. Now, we just quoted the Act here again for members. Section 43 of the Public Finance Management Act provides for an accounting officer to authorize the shifting funds between programs, main divisions within a vote. Why 8% within the TFMA? If you stay within 8%, it's still deemed that you've spent in accordance with the objectives and the functions of that specific main division. And as we all know, it's one that's trying to predict the future, and there will always, probably always be a little bit of a variance in this regard. May not exceed 8% of the appropriated amount per program or main division. If you want to exceed 8%, you must come back to Parliament. Then also the Treasury regulations provide for the augmentation of capital expenditure and to shift savings in compensation expenditure to other expenditure categories. So you may not decrease capital expenditure and you may not increase compensation or personnel related expenditure. This is to protect spending in this regard. People want to spend as much as they can on capital expenditure because of capital formation and the value it contributes, and do not want to increase personnel expenditures per se because it reflects current expenditure. Then the variance on programs in summarized format. Increased expenditures as a result of discernible emphasis on training interventions resulted in additional funding being diverted to Program 1. Upgrading and expansion of the vehicle fleet in all programs. Increased resourcing of crime intelligence functions such as human resources, vehicles, radio communication and so forth, Program 4. Projects in the Protection and Security Services Environment, Program 5. And in strengthening of capacity of detectives. The variance under visible policing resulted mainly because of lower than anticipated cost of living salary increases, enlistments that took place later than planned, etc. And the spending is in accordance with a legally adopted budget. Now, members already raised questions in this regard at the previous meeting. Now, I've taken the liberty maybe just to expand a bit on this. It has not been distributed, but I think when we put it onto the screen as a chairperson, it will be more elaborative of nature. Now, members will remember this specific slide. We presented each and every year. We presented in the estimates of national expenditure nearly background information for members to refer to when they assess our budget in this regard. Now, may I just say, there are three main categories: current payments, transfers and subsidies, and payments for capital assets. Those are the yellow squares or bullets in this regard. Current payments consist of compensation of employees, salary costs, social contributions, wages, allowances, and so forth. The goods and services, very important item, reflect goods and services to be used, but it excludes capital assets. Capital assets are assets with a price or more expensive than 5,000 rand and an economic life of longer than 1 year. Then also the transfer and subsidy environment, and those are basically unrequited payments where there's no counter performance in this regard. And then a very important aspect, also the payments for capital assets. Now, if we look at the compensation, the first sub-bullet, and we look at goods and services, and we look at capital assets, especially machinery and equipment, the following will appear. The saving, so-called saving or surplus, emanated only from compensation as a result of lower cost of living adjustments, because we try to predict into the future, less people qualifying for rental allowance, lower pay progression numbers, and fewer promotion, and then your separation accession flows. People going out, people going into the organization at different times, at different levels. So, and this saving only resulted after the appointments, the personnel numbers destined for this program, according to the resource allocation guide for personnel, have been affected. The personnel numbers still increased. I think it's from 83,000 to 85,000 for this program based on the Act. The transfer, specifically households, as a result of lower medical costs of awaiting trial prisoners. So where did the saving come from? From the lower than anticipated compensation expenditures, as well as the lower than anticipated medical costs for detainees. as a result of the cancellation of a contract in Gauteng, specifically, of a private clinic. The detainees are basically taken to state facilities in the first instance. So the 368 million, 2.6% of the 14,021 million, remitted from this program to other programs, mainly for training, compensation, firearm permit system, vehicles, photographic and forensic equipment, and intensified crime combating initiative. Then members raise a question. So this is a very important program. Why a decrease in this regard? We've now identified compensation and basically transfers, specifically from the medical for detainees, are the sources of the surplus. And how can we illustrate to members that we indeed increase this program? Remember, we've appointed the 85,000 personnel veterans for this program. The operational expenditures, and I must just now go back, the operational expenditures will be the goods and services, second sub-bullet from the top, and then the last bullet, machinery and equipment. That's your main operational expenditures. Your machinery and equipment, and then also your goods and services. In order to deliver service to the public, in this whole very exercise, compensation, goods and services, still increased in here with 328 million. 14.4% from 2.281 billion to 2.611 billion. The capital, specifically the machinery and equipment, increased with 299 million from 713 million to 1.013 billion. And the question then arises, for what? To supplement specific items in Program 2, such as vehicles. Remember, we've increased vehicles in here as well. Fuel and oil in the SATS. May I just elaborate a little bit on this? The total fuel account is in the vicinity of 1.2 billion, 1,200 million, and in the vicinity of 187 million liters. So any price increase, decrease has a direct effect. On the fuel account of TAPS, we do have a model, and we budget for it, and we catch it every year if there's increases. But there's also real increases as a result of the increases in the vehicle fleet, so one will get an increase in this regard. So we say that the 363 was used.
Can I interrupt?
Yes, sir.
Don't they have this? Do you members have this?
No, they don't have it. I've just included it as a response on the question. I will make it available to all members and to the company committee
please.
Secretary.
It's very important information, but
yeah. And then I said, to supplement specific items in Program 2, such as vehicles. We've increased vehicles. Fuel and oil, travel and subsistence, bulletproof, safe, reservist, aircraft purchases, maintenance, downlink equipment, intensified crime combating initiative. Members will remember, we had, if, by lack of a better phrase, I used the word crime spike last year. And we had a meeting in Durban. And emanating from that meeting, certain requirements were put by the provincial commissioner. And one of those requirements, for instance, were S&T and fuel and oil. And this also was addressed. And to enhance operational capacity even further. So all in all, we can assure members that Program 2 reflects still discernible emphasis on this priority in this regard. I shall provide this also to members regarding Program 2. Now, if we go to the item, may I just say before I move actually over, those items that we have just indicated here, fuel and oil vehicles and so forth, members will immediately link when we get now to the items, the specific items, the crux of the matter, the predetermined stated items in terms of what will be representative of growth and capacity building in the road safety and security. Now we get to the income statement. A very, very important statement still, because government is still on a cash basis, so to speak, and that is basically you score your expenditure as your cash is flowing out. And we've made a summary here. And the summary reflects the main sources, the main expenditures, and then surpluses or not. In the first instance, voted funds, we received 32.5 billion in this regard. We expended 32.5 billion also in this regard. There was an amount, if I recall correctly, of approximately 700 rand that remained, rounded off for financial reporting purposes, was 1,000 rand. So full utilization of funds in this regard. Other revenue, we also a collection agent to a certain extent for the National Revenue Fund, SARS to be precise. We collected 251 million to be surrendered to the revenue fund, the donor funds. We received for that period 71 million. But there was also a rollover amount in this regard because donor funds are not voted funds because it's the will of the donor. Donor funds, and we expended 75. If we add the rollover, it would be a surplus, but we did not add the rollover because we only took what was received and expended, not what rolled over in this regard, and the net deficit was 4.2 million. So total, all in all, 32.8 billion received for various purposes, some to be utilized by SAPS, some to be deposited into the National Revenue Fund, and 32.596 million expended, which gives us a 247.6 million surplus. Now, our revenue collection also increased significantly. And then the question again arises, why did it increase? But before we get to that, let's just look at some key material assumptions that can be derived from that income statement. Full utilization of voted funds, 32.5 billion, as only 1,000 rand remained. Revenue collected and deposited into the National Revenue Fund was at 247.6 million. That is the amount right in the corner, bottom corner. And then local and foreign aid assistance received for the year was 71.427 million and was in fact also expended. If we now get to the departmental receipts, which we have received, receipts and therefore revenue, the main reasons for the increased collection of revenue for the period under review are the following. Improved recovery of incidental debt. Please, members of the committee must just know that we do not have intentional debt. We only have incidental or accidental debt, so to speak, where something happens and the person is liable and we recover from that person. The sale of non-capital items at auctions, and then higher number of firearm applications received. 34.5 million of the total in this regard. What has been included in the next slide, Spending Policy Direction 2006-07, is exactly the spending policy, the broad spending policy direction, as indicated at the time to the committee, and the exact words of the President and the Minister of Finance, and what was said at the time. And there are certain key phrases. The government will continue to focus on the critical challenge of further improving our criminal justice system. Obviously, police is part of the criminal justice system. The Minister of Finance, at the MTBPA statement in 2005, improved access to justice, enhanced policing capacity, and better the quality of court administration. And then also in his budget speech, expanding and equipping the police service and improvements in court administration and capacity of the Justice Department. So, members have come a long way with us in recent years. We know that this capacity building drive. Now, once again, we must assess, did we indeed in 06-07 enhance capacity building, or did we not? Now, we are going to go to certain specific main items to see the acquisitions, to see the purchases, and then to illustrate to members that we did indeed enhance capacity all around in a significant manner. Now, the spending policy direction has certain phrases in the MTBPS, and these include additional personnel, the whole capital environment, borderline control, and the revised reserve system, both or all four of them very important. Now we get to the first aspect, and it's the usual one. Members know it by heart. They've come a long way with us. They've seen the growth in this regard, and it reflects actually the personnel environment. Now, the personnel environment is a very important environment for us because we are labor-intensive to a large extent. We set each year targets We publish those targets, we provide it to the committee, and we chase these targets relentlessly. The growth has been significant all around. Now, the target for the period under review, 06-07, was 163,060 people. The department achieved 163,416 figure, 7,800 and something more personnel than the previous financial year. The actual growth from 2002-03 to 2006-07 is now 44,000 personnel more, and still continuing to grow and will be growing immensely in future. And we've also introduced a very prominent aspect, a new sort of salary dispensation with a broadbanding structure and pay progression implemented as part of a revised salary dispensation. The next aspect, and may I just once again emphasize to members that these aspects, and I went back to what we presented to you a year or 2 years ago, it is exactly what we've indicated also at the time. Those items, borderline controls, reserve system, and so forth. In borderline, 77.7 million spent on the implementation of this new function. Expenditures were mainly for detached duties of personnel to be placed for a period at a borderline, and for vehicles, vessels, and fuel and oil. Then we go to the reservist environment. We've indicated to members in the previous financial year that the intention is to implement a revised reservist system, and it was indeed implemented, and expenditure to the amount of 66.9 million, 6 million a little bit more than was initially intended, but again achieved. It included new policy arrangements, tariffs, and also alignment with the rank structure in the FAPS. We then go to the vehicle fleet environment, a very important environment, contentious of nature, debates, discussions in this regard have been going on for quite a number of years in this regard. The growth in the vehicle fleet was once again affected. It grew from 35,480 to 37,617, 2,199 more after replacements had been affected. The general ratio runs in the vicinity of 1 to 4, 1 to 5, and it was maintained and even improved in a number of instances. The similar trend already on its way in 07-08 financial year. Now, I know we're not busy with the current financial year, but we're well on our way to 39,000, 40,000 vehicles. So growth is already on its way again. Similar trend already on its way in 07-08. The fleet has now grown from, and members will remember a couple of years back when we presented the fleet was 27,000, have now grown to 37,000. So it's 10,500 more since January 2002. The provincial commissioners decide what to buy and where to place vehicles, and it should be based on the RAG personnel figures. If I have so many personnel there, I place vehicles in accordance with the norms at that specific place. Now, this has indeed been achieved, the growth in the vehicle fleet. Now, there are two aspects, related aspects, which members are also aware of, and that is the Gauteng radio communication system. Completed recently, will be in full operation from mid-December, if I recall correctly, and this will also enhance in Gauteng the direction or instruction of response vehicles, because it's so important for us to respond appropriately to complaints and victims. As we've also said yesterday, there are two points of interaction when your complainant or victim is coming to the station, or when you are visiting the crime scene, the complainant or the victim in this regard. And then also our automated vehicle location system, a new thing which is in implementation phase as we are sitting here. Now, then we get to the IJS project. It consists of a number of projects, as we've indicated in the E&E to members, ID services, detention management, exhibit management, interoperability, and so forth. 213 million was received and 213 million was spent in this regard. Then we get to another contentious item, the bullet-resistant or bullet-proof vest environment. Now, I think members will support the statement that significant numbers of bulletproofs have also been purchased in recent years, especially last year and again this year, as will be reported on within a couple of months' time. The normal baseline expenditure on this item was between 30 million and 40 million. Last year, in 06-07, 163 million was spent, representing approximately 48,000 full sets of bullet-resistant vests. It also included vests for women. A separate provision for new trainees also from the current financial year. We've separated the allocation, and a trainee will now receive his or her bulletproof vest once she leaves the college after 6 months, and not only when she gets to the station in this regard. So, in respect of the next item, buildings and other infrastructure, it reflects the establishment of total and partially new facilities. 510.5 million was spent. We received in the vicinity of 498 million, and there was a slight overrun in respect of certain dire and specific needs. The full amount was spent. Capital assets again. In addition, 382 million was also received and spent on the maintenance and property rights. The members will remember it is devolved from PWD last financial year, but quite a backlog still exist in respect of maintenance. We said it previously and we say it again, and we think we can only increase and enhance the maintenance backlog on buildings over a multi-year period. The modernization of computer technology, it has received priority attention, mainframe and equipment environments in recent financial year. Although we are not busy with 0708, but maybe just an indication of what to come, the hosting and network environment will receive quite significant resourcing from 2008-09 onwards in order to complete the package, so to speak. Then also, the establishment of the Division Protection and Security Services. We've indicated some of the pilot projects there. This is one of the fastest growing environments in the road, and significant numbers of personnel have been allocated to this specific environment. So it received significant personnel numbers for ports of entry security, Bay Bridge, Oar Tambo, Durban Harbour, and railway policing in the Western Cape, Gauteng, and KwaZulu-Natal, and then obviously with associated equipment in this regard. Then we get to a very high priority in SAPS, because we are a growing organization with significant numbers of personnel. The growth in personnel and associated equipment is significant. So what must be done? We must train those personnel and other personnel for that matter. This important environment received priority attention. The actual expenditures increased from 626 million in the previous financial year to more than 807 million in 06-07, a growth of 29%, which is self-explanatory of nature. Compensation expenditure for trainers and training expenditure, meals, travel of trainees are significant cost drivers in this regard. Then we get to the firearm environment. Increased emphasis was also placed on the acquisitioning of firearms as well. 49 million was spent on approximately 12,800, in excess of 12,000 firearms, whilst the normal baseline is in the facility of 9,000 firearms per annum. So also the firearm environment has been increased. The marking of firearms initiative, amongst other controls, is also necessary to expand the control and environment, control environment for this item, and is a subject actually on its own with a lot of arrangements. Then we look at the Firearm Control Act. In the Firearm Control Act implementation, once again, a significant amount was spent in this regard, 172.5 million in 06-07. Additional 77 million was utilized for expediting this initiative. Now, although it isn't there, I would like to add two main items, and that is also the helicopter environment. In recent years, we've acquired 30 new helicopters, and in the last financial year too. So we've also increased in recent times our helicopter fleet significantly, with 13 new additional helicopters, with a unit price of between 17 and 21 million each, quite a significant amount in total over the multi-year period. Then also the general equipment environment, including space, ammunition, radio, communication, driver training, photographic equipment, leases and fuel and oil, which were all enhanced in addition to usual baseline. That's from a macro perspective, because the figures are there, the purchases have been affected, and it's all basically up then to the distribution and the utilization effect. What we also do, we also keep the summarized scorecard that's currently on the screen. Members are well acquainted with this, and we add to that the whole time to sort of keep track on a macro level of what has been allocated and what must still be done. Now, if we look at it, one can see we've introduced the compensation aspect. The Division Protection Security Services with railway policing and ports of entry have been introduced. The aircraft have been addressed. Elections some time ago. The death grant environment for prison dying on duty. Training initiatives. The new revised reserve system. New policing infrastructure, property leases, maintenance, the whole devolvement model, the IJS, Integrated Justice Sector Program, the modernization and expansion of the vehicle fleet, the ICT plan, and the end-user equipment, firearm control system, the borderline security, relatively new function, very new and will continue to grow, general equipment in terms of vests and weapons, and then also the radio communication system, Gauteng, we can tick off because it has been completed. There's a number of aspects that will be added when we report on the 07-08 financial year. I think, ladies and gentlemen, we can all in all say our overall capacity can increase significantly, whether you look at levels, whether you look at increases, whether you look at volumes, it has increased again, and from a macro perspective. Thank you.
And thank you very much, Regional Commissioner Smith. Members, that's the financial statement and report of the sub. I will be guided by you on questions and comments that you want to do. Can I ask just one question? It's not part of this, but it does affect you. How do you monitor the finances of the National Secretary, since they get their portion from your budget? How do you monitor whether they are using their budget the way they're supposed to be using it, National Secretary?
Chairperson, I would just like to respond in this regard. I saw the appearance. I saw the minutes and press articles of the appearance. I think it was on Friday. Remember last year, and I think it was the 18th of October, there was a legislative oversight for the previous year. At that time, this committee instructed us, SAPS and the National Secretariat, to have more of an integrated, a coordinated approach. At that time, or after the instruction, it did indeed happen. We saw each other a number of times, I think it was in October, November, December, and so forth. When, at that meeting or after that meeting, it became then known to us that initially at the beginning of the year, a certain budget was indicated. I think it was 13.7 million. Subsequent to that, we have indicated, and I think we provided them an initial budget of 8.5 million. But that was all before that committee meeting. After the committee meeting, we gelled. We coordinated. What we did then, we met with them. We said to them, this is what you have been received. You've indicated to the committee 13.7 million. Do you want the additional money? Can you spend it? Because it must be underpinned by spending capacity. And I cannot express myself on the objectives because they function quite independently. And then an additional 490,000 rand was requested, and which we also allocated. So indeed, the allocation increase. I think there's now a much closer and monitoring relationship between us, but it only happened after October last year when the committee said the two entities, please get together and plan. So I think that was the confusion, the 13.7 vis-a-vis the initial expenditures. I cannot express myself whether the outcomes were desired or not by this committee. What I can say is the expenditures increased with approximately 100% from, I think, in the vicinity of 4.45 million to 9 million or so forth. So may I just say that whatever they need, because it's small amounts, Madam Chairperson, and whatever they need and within their mandate, the police have always been willing to give, but then they must be able to spend that. That is a very important aspect. So that is just in short terms, but I do have the documents with me, so I certainly monitor it now. They are, as we said last year, they have become a cost center, and I think they're all confusing. But that's my point of view is a perception. If I just read what I saw on the PNG's website, it appeared to me was between the 13.7 and then what they actually had in this regard. May I also indicate that no funds were taken away in this regard. It was actually a need, the 13.7. When did they appear? February, March, maybe last year, for the E&E. And we only appeared the 18th. But we monitor from the SAP side the expenditure. And as I've said, we've requested meetings with them a number of times. I think I have 5 dates in my diary where we sat down, we said, we're hearing now this is, but the confusion seems to me the 13.7.
Thank you very much. Although I was not part of that meeting, but let me not comment further. I recognize Honorable Kolabanat, Honorable Shengepa, Honorable Maseramule, Demo Rote, and Honorable Daniel.
Thank you, Chair. I wonder if we might look at this Firearms Control Act implementation. You referred to, in passing, you said there's 172 million here, but there was another 77 million spent on this, which is not actually referred to in this document. So we're looking at 249, that's included within it, 172 million spent on a system that one still receives endless queries from, where the applications are taking well over a year and still, in fact, haven't left the police station to go to Pretoria. And added to that is an appeals system that is so log-jammed, I think the people will die before they receive their licenses. Perfectly respectable people wanting a hunting license, rejected out of hand, go to appeal, and finally just give up. And we're actually encouraging people to break the law. Why must respectable people not be allowed to go onto a farm and shoot once a year if they wish because of a log jam set up by an extremely expensive system? Do you have any indication, you say here, that there are increased applications bringing in 34 million, yes, so they're bringing in more revenue. Do we know of those applications, how many of them have actually received licenses?
Thanks, Chairperson. Let me also enjoy my privilege of being deployed back to the portfolio committee by asking a question that I left in this committee in 2005 in my constituency. There was an approved building of a police station in MLO. Since this year, I've taken this from the infrastructure allocation which was here. Since this year, it hasn't been built now. Also, on the bulletproof vest, you said to spend 163 million on bulletproof vest. I just want to check whether the female one are costing the same price than the male one. Also, appreciate the budgeting of that one because there was an outcry of saying they are not enough. And also to check whether we are working towards of having being one bulletproof vest, one police officer. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. Two questions. I just want to find out if under certain circumstances, you will be compelled to make use of petty cash. For instance, far remote areas where you are located far away from the metro centers. If under those circumstances you are compelled to make use of petty cash, who should be responsible for it, and how do you account for it? Secondly, I can see everybody is in love with the radio communication system in Gauteng. It's just that one was never able to see. And how can you tell us, because time and money goes together, can you tell us how long did it take to complete the whole system? And then how much roughly did it cost, time and money? And can it be used as an example, the whole country, this kind of system? Because every time you give an example, you give us Gauteng radio system, all the time Gauteng radio communication system, everything. As if it's the only thing existing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I want us to go to the slide on the income statement. There is an amount of 251 million under other revenue. And the following slide, we have an amount of 247 million rands, which is revenue collected and deposited into the National Revenue Fund. And then, the next slide, we have 34.5 million rands under the departmental receipts. Now, starting with the last amount, I want to know why this other collected funds is not under departmental receipts. Why the difference? And also going to the first slide I referred to, you have donor funds of 71 million rand. Now, are these donor funds not received, given receipts? Why are they not falling also under departmental receipts? And the revenue collected and deposited, the difference between this 247 and this 34, I need clarity on that. If you deposited 247 million rand, how much in total did you collect? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I would like to know, what is the role of the SAPS in the Durban Harbour, particularly? Because this harbour is viewed is very important for the economy the flooded country to be viable. That is their role vis-a-vis that of the NPA, which is the National Port Authority. That's one. Secondly, Chair, the borderline saga. Our research unit tells us that the lowest expenditure, amongst others, has been that of radio control, site clearance, border post, and acquisitions of sites. Now, you're saying here on the borderline control, you have spent 77.719 million. On what exactly? Because on page 33, you're saying this has been achieved. What exactly have you achieved? Because the SANDF is saying you have not deployed yet in the borderline. So what exactly have you achieved? Yes, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Sisi. The last one will be Honorable Ntuli, and then I'll take the second round of hands after this one. Let us first deal with this round of hands, and then after the responses, I'll take the second hand. I'll start with you, but we will stop with Honorable Ntuli now. Honorable Ntuli?
Are you fine now? All right, then let us take responses from SAPS then, after we should take the second case of him.
Let me, while Stefan is preparing himself to answer some of the questions, deal with the last question about borderline. The South African Police Service is deployed in the borderline. I make an open invitation to any member of this committee now in December would accompany me at the expense of the South African Police Service so that we go to the borderline of Namibia, Botswana, and those areas where we have deployment. It's not for the SANDF to determine whether we've been deployed or not deployed. We have been deployed in the borderline because the process of removing ultimately the SANDF has to take place by 2009. By March 2009, there will be no soldiers at the borderline. It will be the South African Police Service. Right now, we have deployment of the police in the borderline, and there are reasons why the police are deployed in the borderline. It is they who can investigate crimes that occur across the border. It is they that have the capacity to do investigations and make follow-ups and do arrests. Soldiers don't investigate. Soldiers don't arrest. Soldiers don't lead to prosecution. Soldiers simply stop people from moving. They are not doing this. There are certain areas where we have not yet deployed. And this is going according to the plans between ourselves and the SANDF. At the top level, General Ngwenya and those that are in charge, that they will move from this place when we are ready to bring new people. Where are these people coming from? The people that we are bringing in is people that we must train. Train them to do border duties. So it's not just taking anyone who might have been a policeman in Randfontein and putting at the borderline. Because you've got to look at family situations. They've got families, they've got homes. You need to make arrangements that you deploy people in a right way in those areas. So we are currently deployed, and I'm inviting you, Chair. You can join me. We go to the border and you will see the border because one of these days we might send them Christmas presents. Those who have been in the border, we would want you to come and join us in this so that you can see this deployment that is real, that is happening. Individuals in the SANDF may very well say things that they know very little about. We know because we have deployments there, and it's not for them to decide whether we are deployed or not. It was decided by cabinet, it was decided by government that the police must move in there. And this is what we are busy doing, and we will complete this in March 2009. So I'll leave the rest of the questions to be answered by my colleagues.
Maybe whilst you are preparing yourself, I should also just say something about the borderline issue that has been raised. We have a report that is still with my office that will be made available to the participants. By participants, I mean those members of parliament who visited the borders in July this year and also the borderline in July this year. And I think most of the issues that members would like to raise as far as borderline is concerned will be relevant to the team that will be dealing with that report of the borderline. I think when Commissioner says that he's inviting me to be part of his delegation to visiting the borderline, that's I welcome this because in some of the borders that I visited, actually, originally, I did not have those borderlines from my initial visit, but because of Commissioner then advised me, for instance, to visit Gate 6. I wasn't aware of Gate 6 because if you talk about Gate 6, there's no border there in Gate 6. You just move in and out on a Wednesday. Nobody cares whether you come. come back or not, you know. So some of us are not aware of those instances. But because of the invitation from the police, we happen to visit that borderline. So in all, what I'm trying to say is the report is there from members of parliament who visited the border and the borderline, border post and the borderline. And I think we'll be, early next year when we come back, we'll be in a position of discussing that report. You will make a copy available to yourself, although then at that level we'll discuss the report with members of the executive that are affected, because it was a joint report from different study groups. Thank you very much, then you made it.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me just go to a number of them. I first want to start with the petty cash, especially and in rural areas. And I must now recall from my memory, I think we have in the vicinity of 192 standing advance officers countrywide to the value of between 42 and 46 million in petty cash. So what we try to do, we try to provide a petty cash for the small or relatively small purchases, and we are also bound by supply chain management thresholds in order to perform a cash purchase. We are distributed quite countrywide, and people can use this especially for travel and subsistence and smaller purchases in this regard. We are also engaging in a cashless system, which has actually been completed and piloted in Northwest as we sit here, where we will basically work like a financial institution in terms of the cash at hand. We will score the cash differently, receipts and expenditures, but we will work the float where we deduct basically our cash supplement in respect of the receipts that we are getting. All in all, basically, we are developing also a new cashier system, but we're trying to have standing advance officers countrywide available. We also have an EFT system, two or three corporate bank accounts, and a number of branch accounts, where your standing advance holder, that's the person issuing the advance, and must also then receive the claim to process the claim after the advance has been utilized, with such persons or such services are being delivered. Obviously, we cannot provide them at all 1,100 something stations, because it is just too geographically distributed in South Africa. But we're trying to place them in between. You do have peculiarities and complexities, especially in provinces such as the Northern Cape, where you have significant differences. But we can also affect that electronically, where we don't hand over the cash, we can put the cash in the person's bank account. That is basically the petty cash system. Then also in terms of the revenue, I would just like to go back to that slide. The 34.5 million that we've seen there as part of the total is included thus in the bigger amount, the 251 million. It is included. It is not in addition. It is just a portion emanating from the payment for firearm applications in this regard. If we go back to the income statement, SAPLAB collected 251 million on behalf of the National Revenue Fund. And after the deficit of the donor fund has been deducted there, 247 surplus remained. I'm more than willing to also go with a member just afterwards through it is note 14 in the annual financial statements on page 161, where what normally happens also your last 2 days, and coincidentally, your firearm applications has also, or in previous years, had the same deadline as the financial year, 31 March 2006. So in that last 3-4 days, you had a rush as well, where a number of people are coming into police stations and wanting to apply for their firearm licenses. So you always get a huge deposit in your last day or two. If I remember correctly, even in 2006, on that last day of the month, you had a number of people coming into the stations and paying. What I'm actually saying is, the 251 was collected, and the 247 is the net surplus. But note 14, and I don't know whether I should read it, but I can read it just maybe to indicate and relate it then to the specific slide, which said we had an opening balance of 3.4 million, 3.439 million. We collected 251 million for the year, giving us 255 million. Paid during the year was 244 million, and our closing balance was 10,682. If you maybe visit that note on page 161 of the annual financial statement, it will explain the whole situation, sir. But you're more than welcome that we can also go through it because it's cross-reference to other statements as well.
Let me answer another question whilst you're preparing to answer the next one. Housing. Let me get back to this. In the South African Police Service, there is no province that is a favorite province. In the South African Police Service, there is a province which is a problem child. The problem child in South Africa is Gauteng province when it comes to crime. The majority of criminal activity of all kinds, whether it's organized crimes or all of this, happens in Gauteng. The second problem we had in Gauteng is that the radio system of Gauteng was finished. A policeman in Springs couldn't call a policeman in Hammanskraal using the radio system. The radio system was finished, couldn't function. So there was no communication amongst the police in Gauteng because the radio system was old and was out of order. So we then had to say we need to start somewhere. We start where crime is a major problem, and the crime is a major problem in Gauteng. We put up this radio system, which does a number of things. One is a 10111, normal service 10111. It is able to locate police vehicles. If a police vehicle is parked, that system can show that that car is parked. If that car is idling, that system, the control room, the people who are in the control room, can see that that car is idling. If the car is moving, they can see the car is moving. So for purposes of response to calls that come in, that system is able, we are able to communicate with that vehicle that go to number so and so. And if it's parked at McDonald's at 9 o'clock, the policeman who is driving that car would have to account, why is he eating so early in the morning at 9 o'clock? Because he might have had breakfast and so on and so forth. So it is a system that not only locates the vehicle, it can dispatch the vehicle. It has this AVL system. Now, we started in Gauteng. It cost us 600 million over a four-year period. The problem of putting up this radio system is that you need to get involved with other state departments. Department of Environmental Affairs, we have to put up masks at the high area so that the communication, and sometimes they say this is what site? Yeah, this is an area where there are butterflies, and if you come and put this mask, and I'm telling the real thing, you put up this mask, it's going to disturb the rights of the butterflies. So we have to look for another place where we had to put it in, what is the place where there were frogs, particular frogs. So we have to look. It takes a long time to negotiate from one state department to another. It took us 4 years to do this radio at a cost of 600 million. But we are not stopping there. We are now going to start, I think the tenders are closing
16th of December, thereabouts, or something, we're starting the Eastern Cape radio system because of the vastness of the province. We're starting there now to install the same radio kind of system that we have in Gauteng. After the Eastern Cape, we go to KwaZulu-Natal because that's another problem child. So we need to go to KwaZulu-Natal and install the same radio system. Ultimately, the aim is to do it everywhere in the country, but you don't eat an elephant in one bite, and you've got to take a number of bites to get to that. So we're looking at budget, we're looking at the negotiations that must take place, but it's not because Gauteng is the favorite, it's because it's a problem child. Thanks.
Commissioner, is this the communication Rajabali was talking about, is it the same as the pilot process that is in Nyanga?
It's the same.
Yeah, I think we went
this other one is much bigger. This one is smaller. But we are intending to come here and do, in fact, Northern Cape. Northern Cape, they are already in some parts using the same kind of radio system that we have in Gauteng. But, yes, it's the same, but this one is much, much bigger, the one that we're talking about. The role of the police in the Durban Harbour. Commissioner, please.
In terms of the police's role at the harbour, one talk about the National Ports Authority and the police. It's the same relationship as between ACSA and the police at an airport. The Ports Authority is responsible for the management of the harbour. The police's role at the harbour is twofold. Number one, we secure the port. Therefore, you will see the police boats in the port. It is to secure the facility. The second one is to utilize the port for the prevention and combating of crime. In this regard, various departments are cooperating. Home Affairs, SARS, specifically Customs, the police, Department of Agriculture, Health, etc., they all function at the port. We therefore utilize the port for prevention and combating, especially in view of the fact that you have import and export taking place, major containers coming into the country, going out of the country. So our role is to utilize the port for the combating of crime. I think the easiest part to see a port is a static roadblock. It's about the same as you have a major roadblock. There's a facility where you utilize the facility for the combating of crime. But Port Authority is the owner. They are responsible for the management of the port. We utilize the port for prevention and combating. On the firearm, maybe I should just on the Firearms Control Act. I think if one look at the new act, possibly it's strange to many people. Competency certificates is something that people in South Africa were not used to. It is something new. If one look at the figures here, indicated in the report, the processing is 201,000 firearm license renewals processed, and then 106,000 competency certificates issued. I can get closer figures for you in relation to specifically this year. I know that the ministers during the press conferences after the 2 monthly reports that we provide also provide information to the media on the number of licenses, renewed new licenses, etc. So, Madam Chair, we can provide the committee with the newest information, possibly a bit broader than in the report, to say how many applications and how many licenses issued and how many competency certificates and how many appeals and how many upheld and that type of thing. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first one on bulletproof vests. Presently, we have 144,299 bulletproof vests in the country. This year alone, we have ordered 9,373 for females and 18,184 for males. The cost of the bulletproof vest ranges from 3,000 to 4,500, depending on the size of the bulletproof vest. They are more or less the same for that one of men and their ladies, because the contents are the same, the ingredients are the same, it's just the shape of it that makes it for the ladies as distinct from that for men. MLO police station, yes, MLO was in planning for quite some time, and the delay, according to public works and et cetera, according to us, was caused by changing of the needs analysis. When we're about to advertise the tender, the needs changes. There are more people at the police station, and we need to expand it. And we're dealing with consultants who do our plannings and all. But presently, it is due to be advertised this month, that is November 2007. I think that's all, Commissioner.
Yeah, follow up, on the bullet vest. Sometimes there was a complaint. I don't know whether I should call it a complaint or a concern. That the texture of the material as well as the load, the weight was not taken into consideration. As a result, it was being said they were feeling uncomfortable when wearing it. That's why sometimes there's a little bit of resistance when they're supposed to put on the vest. As to whether there's been some improvement with regard to that.
A bulletproof vest is very uncomfortable for anybody. Anybody who puts on a bulletproof vest is very uncomfortable. When it's hot, it's very hot, and so on. So the issue of comfort is one issue that we look at, but the issue of comfort is something that we have accepted, that putting on a bulletproof vest is very uncomfortable, basically. But the problem about bulletproof vest has been we need to protect the police from certain caliber of weapons that are used against the police. It is one thing if you put on a bulletproof vest that is meant to stop a 9mm bullet from piercing through your body. But if somebody is going to use an AK-47, you've got to have that bulletproof vest that can stop an AK-47. So there are two major different kinds of bulletproof vests. The ones that can stop a higher caliber firearm and the one that does the lower. Now the higher caliber firearm will be heavier than the small one. And so from time to time, this has been the problem of them. Problem of the police was not really comfort or not comfort. The problem was, you know, everybody wants to be very special, and the police also regard themselves as special people. We used to buy in a police station where there were 20 policemen who were doing crime prevention. We would buy 20 bulletproof vests. And so the ones who go on duty, they put on the bulletproof vest. When they come back, they take out the bulletproof vest, they put there. And the next group that comes takes their own bulletproof vest, take the same bulletproof vest. The police have said, no, I want my own. My own, right? So we've got to look at the number of police that were deployed and have had to increase the number of bulletproof vests so that if a person is not putting the bulletproof vest, it's because this person does not want to put the bulletproof vest. He or she has a bulletproof vest that belongs to him. What we had done at the time, we had said the outer cover, we can make it individual at the time that I'm talking about when we're 2020. The only thing that would be the same is the real, the plate. So you can have a cover, which is what you put on your body, but the plate is the same. So you take the plate, you put it in, the outer cover is yours. But they have gone a step further to say, no, all of it must be mine. And that is why we have increased the number of bulletproof vests. Ask me the question, do they all put them on? I will tell you no. Not all of them put them on. We can give instructions. license, we can do all of these things, we can do whatever we want to do to make sure that the commanders make sure that when they go out, they are wearing bulletproof vests. But some people sneak out without wearing the bulletproof vest or even have it on his shoulder as if he's going to put it on. As soon as he gets into the car, he puts it in the boot, he moves around like somebody else who does not have the bulletproof vest. But that's the reason why we have had a number of problems in relation to bulletproof vests.
Thank you, sir. Just two more questions. I think the one relates to the 34 million and then also how many of those firearm applications have been dealt with. I do not believe we have figures in this regard at this point in time. The one is the firearm control access and the other one is the police financial system. If we have to do that, it will require some programming and interfacing probably of a different kind in this regard, which we do score it. In terms of the revenue side or in terms of the application side, and there are some interfacing in this regard. But if you have to go on aging, because it's basically aging, you've received payment and which have been completed and which have not been completed, we will have to see it because it will require some new programming in this regard. So it's not readily available. Say that was the one, and the other one was borderline security. What has been purchased was basically for compensation, 8.3 million goods and services, 25.9 million fuel, oil, details, duties, and S&T. Vehicle licenses, transfers, and subsidies, 102,000. And then capital assets, aircrafts, vehicles, vessels, etc., to the value of 43 million. That was the 77.7 million categories of expenditure in the previous financial year. And in the current financial year, there's still an additional capital drive in this regard, ranging from vehicles, deployment costs, vessels, maintenance, equipment bases, life-saving equipment, mobile radio equipment. So there's a number of aspects to those. 708 here is not yet under review.
Chairperson, I need further clarity. Looking at that slide, for example, if I heard the commissioner correctly, he says that 34.5 million relates to the firearm application. Is that correct? Now, if that is correct, what is the income from the sale of non-capital items at auction? Why only put the amount from the firearm applications and yet they list the sale of non-capital items and yet do not give the amount for that? And the second clarity I need is going to the slide before this one about that the revenue collected and deposited. If 247 million was given to SARS, the police will not collect everything and give everything to SARS. That 247, I think, must be a percentage of an amount of an overall amount they collected. Because if I heard him correctly, he said that was deposited into SARS account. When I sit up here, I want you to clarify again. Do you mean SARS? Was that given to SARS? And if I had the correct, you said yes. So my question is, if you give SARS that 247, obviously that is not from the voted fund. It is from which fund and from which total? That's what I want to know.
Honorable Senator. Thanks. It's a follow-up question, Chairperson, on petty cash. You said you budgeted it for 42 million. I just want to check. You said you are developing another new system of saying that the system that you are using now is to deposit that cash on individual's account. And I just want to check what is the new system that you are, how is the new system look like that you are developing? Maybe it's better than the one that you are using now. Just want to check because the system you made mention that you deposit the money in the individual's account when doing a policing in rural areas. Just want to check which system are deployed. Honorable Mwatse.
Thank you, Chairperson. So firstly, just an explanation, clarity that I need. I don't understand this. IJS, what does it mean? I just wanted to know that because if I couldn't back on. My other question is that
in assisting to try and upgrade the police. Do you maybe assist them with their education, maybe funds to when they want to further their education and so on in order to get help? Are they budgeted for? And then we are saying here again, the funds are transferred from other areas. Training interventions resulted in additional funding being diverted to Program 1. Now, in Program 1, I'm looking at it's an administrative issue. I'm looking at issues like such as visible policing and then Domestic Violence Act. We have been visiting lots of police stations where we found that there are many members of staff who are not trained on Domestic Violence Act. Now, I was just looking at that, whether they are budgeted to be retrained on the on these money that you are diverting from other areas after the budget. Can you just save this money for retraining of these other people who are not retrained at the police station for Domestic Violence Act? And then most other politicians that you have visited, they lack the vehicles, they didn't have vehicles. I was in Marikana, they have got the substation and which didn't have a vehicle. Now, I'm looking at this transferring of funds. Whether it is possible in the interim that we can transfer and ensure that these people are also getting vehicles, those who are saying that they cannot implement the sector section because of they don't have vehicles. Thank you.
Ms. Van Rijk and then the JDL.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, a couple of questions. First, related to training and personnel in general. There's been a clear reduction in training of detectives, both on detective command side as well as on detective learning programs. That despite the fact that we have a serious problem in terms of the detection rate and a shortage of detectives in such. Can we get an explanation why that is happening? I mean, we also, in our appropriation, took that in consideration, the need for more detectives. The second question is, insofar as the retention, the Secretariat did an investigation on retention at the forensic laboratories, a retention strategy at forensic laboratories. And they claim that there is no such strategy in place. Now, in light of the fact that we are losing people at those laboratories, when can we expect to have a strategy in place and what will that strategy entail? Second question, Chairperson, has got to do with the issue of visible policing and specifically of sector policing. 2005-2006 report indicated different numbers of sectors to be established. Now, Commissioner Price is not here, so I don't know. Sorry, there is a chairperson, Commissioner. There is a clear reduction.
And you are a protected member of Parliament.
Thank you, Chairperson. There is a clear reduction in the number of sectors that are going to be established. 2005-2006 referred to 1,249 sectors to be established in the country. The 2006-2007 annual report only referred to a number of 942 to be established in South Africa. Can we get an explanation why there is this reduction? Why is there a difference? And what informed SAPS to arrive at that at the reduced number of sectors to be established? The reason why I'm asking this question, Chairperson, if you see, if you look at the 169 priority stations, it says that 76% of it has been established. But that's 76% of the reduced numbers of sectors. If we look at the 2005-2006 number of sectors that should have been established, it's clear that it's been only 52% of sectors that were actually established. And then we would also like to know, as a result of that, what will the impact be, specifically on provinces like Mpumalanga and Limpopo, who it seems like have lost quite a number of sectors. Chairperson, it's important for us to understand this, because 2-3 years ago, we were told that sector policing is the new approach in terms of fighting crime. And for that reason, we need to understand why these reductions in SAP.
Thank you, Ms. Van Wyk, and welcome. Actually, I was supposed to have informed members of parliament that you were deployed outside the country by your party. Welcome back. Honorable Ndate Diale.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is clarity on slide 10 on our administration. This on a question of medical support, whether it is or includes the medical aid for the members of the staff. Again, I would also like to be clear on what happens when a member of staff is injured when he's on duty. And thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm saying I'm covered, sir.
No, fine, Sissy, I didn't hear you. Ms. Kolabana?
Thank you, Chair. I think we've all heard recently of the 10 million rand spent paid to suspended correctional services personnel following escapes. And this was a figure that used to be included in the annual report. It now was no longer included in the 2006-07 report. Could we have the details of disciplinary action taken against members in relation to abetting prisoners to escape from cells, and what the cost has been to the taxpayers, please.
The last one is Dagmar Ode.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is about the revised reservist system. Can the Commissioner explain as to what exactly is happening? What system are they revising? Are they changing from what exists? And is this amount of money spent only on revised system or paying the reserve? Thank you.
Yeah, I thank you very much. I think now I will give over to the department responding for the last question. I was looking around here because I'm looking around for something to do with reserves. I know that I've got a pile of complaints in my office from different provinces. Different reserves that are not even getting an allowance for transport. And I know that we were told here in 2005-2006 budget that at least there was something like 60 million that was budgeted for the reserves. But I tried to write letters to provincial commissioners, but it seems as if I'm not succeeding because I haven't got a response yet from those affected provinces. But it seems as if all the 9 provinces, when it comes to the issue of reserves, the understanding is not. It's not the same. Maybe next time, now that we are here, you can really tell us what is happening with the reserves. Are they getting something, just a statement for the transport to go to work and back? If not, just explain to us, because I know there are some that has been with the staff for the past three to four years. They haven't been given not even a cent for, not for bus fare, you see. So I'm happy also that Ndatema wanted to raise that question. Let me then give over to staff then to respond on those questions.
Let's deal with the last question, Madam Chair, about the reservists. I think there are 4 categories of reservists. I think in the annual report it must be on page 52. There is Category A, which is functional deployment, they are normal reservists. Then there's category B, deployed as support personnel at stations. And category C, specialized support. These are your doctors, your pilots, and so on and so forth. That's category C. And category D is the people that you find in rural and ABC, urban safety, this thing. We used to have a system that demanded for anybody who wanted to be a reservist, a matric certificate and a driver's license. And we sat down and said, if we continue in this way, a lot of people in rural areas who should be interested in their own safety are excluded, because where were they going to get a driver's license and where were they going to get matric? We then changed the system in order to allow for those people to be able to enter the reservist system, by removing the demand for matric and driver's license. That will deal with your category G of this thing. Then there are people who are millionaires who want to be reservists. They join because they want to work on Saturdays, pilots and doctors especially. That's your category, the next category. The only time we pay, Madam Chair, is when we issue a call-up of reservists. When we say we have a disaster in such and such an area, and we call up the reservists, so we call specific people that you are on duty from this day. Those people, when they are on that duty, they then get a stipend. They get a stipend because we have called them up. By the way, being a reservist is free. You decide when do you want to work. You have got to work so many hours. You know, you are given all what you need to do to help you. But the only time we pay is when there is a call up. Let's say there is 2010. We decide that the numbers of police we have are few. We need 20,000 more people. We will issue a call-up to the reservists to say, all of you people are working from day this to that day. They then get paid. So that's what we mean by a revised, you know, reservist system. Ordinarily, we have a problem in this country that not only reservists expect to get paid, CPS, people in the CPM expect to be paid. And me, I still have to find an item in the budget that's voted by you and Parliament that says this amount here is for CPM. I haven't found it. I've been looking for it. It's not there. And I don't want to run into trouble with the Auditor General, spend money that I can't say it has been allocated to me to do this thing. So there is a new system. My colleagues can elaborate on the system of new reservist system. But it is a system that is meant to bring in a lot more people. Because in the rural area, we could only get reservists from the farmers, the white people who were there. They could afford to be reservists. And the majority of the black people who were there, laborers and so on and so forth, were excluded because of the conditions that we put for this. They too, in a given area, if there is a call-up, they will get funds. If we have reservists in border with Zimbabwe and suddenly there is an influx of people from Zimbabwe, we can make a call-up. We call up all these reservists to come on duty, and for that period, there is a specific amount, I don't remember how much it is, Commissioner Price will give, there is a specific amount that they get paid per day for the work that they are doing as a result of a call-up. You can, the other questions, I don't know.
Follow-up? Yes. On the reservist, I just want to check, same as the question that was raised by Honorable Dia, saying that how if the police official maybe get injured on duty, same as reservist, what happened if a reservist...
A reservist who is on duty is a full policeman.
Are you still on the platform?
A reservist on duty he's got the same power, same whatnot as a policeman. If a policeman gets injured on duty, the South African Police Service has a medical, what do you call this? A permit. We've got a medical scheme. That medical scheme kicks in to give medical treatment, whatever this policeman needs. Similarly, we then make arrangements. If the reservist can't be a member of parliament, we make arrangements that these people get medical treatment in the same way. So a reservist on duty is a full policeman, enjoys all of this. If a reservist were to die on duty, that reservist would be in a position that the department sits and say, we give 30,000 or 300,000. 300,000 to the family of the policeman who died on duty, and that reservist can get the same amount that the police get. So he is a full member of the South African Police Service when he's working.
We are still waiting for other responses from other members. But on the issue of, can I just say something on the issue that has been raised by National Commissioner on the issue of the CPF? I think we all know that there is nothing like CPF is supposed to be paid by anybody. And they also know that they are not liable to be paid by ourselves or even by the police. Since the matter is still in discussion with the ruling party of where even to locate this CPF. So I think the issue of the CPF is a matter that is in the hands of the politicians. It has nothing to do with the police at the moment. So I think if there is any member who will have to say something about the CPF, let's leave the CPF until the ANC's national conference in December, where we know that we did make submission as this piece of stability, and that we hear from them what is it then that's going to happen after December. We are still going to pursue our position on the issue of the CPF. But at the moment, there is no way that the CPF can claim or demand any kind of funds from the police themselves. In other provinces, we do have those proactive CPS. For instance, provinces like the province that we visited last, I think it was in Mpumalanga, I'm not mistaken. No, it was Limpopo, where the CPF is in that area. They were maintaining themselves financially and otherwise. You see? Yeah. But so what I'm trying to say, we are not going to expect the police to fund the CPF without any piece of legislation that guides them to do so. Okay, let us then get responses of other questions.
Chair, thank you. Possibly just quickly to say about the reservist. A reservist works 16 hours voluntary per month. But when we call up the reservist, we can't call the reservist up for more than 160 hours per month. Once we call the reservist up, whether it's for crime prevention operation, whether it's for 2010, etc., we pay the reservist according to a scale linked to the rank. It starts off now on a daily rate, I think it's about 130, 140, and it goes up in accordance with rank. So when we call the reservist up, we do pay the reservist the daily, what is the word that you use? Yeah, according to the daily tariff. Secondly, in terms of the sectors, when we started off with sector policing, now the approach was to look at the station areas and to divide the station areas in smaller areas for the purpose of deploying specific teams to deal with the sectors. However, although there was a instruction to the provinces on how it should be done, we did not have a common approach in provinces. In certain areas, they followed the ward boundaries as a sector. Now, you can't use that type of boundary when you work crime. A CBD's crime is totally different from an industrial area or an area where you have only houses and small businesses, etc. Therefore, crime became the factor to link it. In the CBD, you're going to have robberies at business, you're going to have muggings in the streets, etc. Once you look at, for example, an area where you do have predominantly houses, you're going to have house breaking and possibly theft out of motor vehicle, etc. That became the point of departure. In the process, we are now rationalizing the area. It does mean that where you possibly had two sectors where you would have deployed two teams, you are now utilizing one team to deal with two sectors. It's also not static. It can differ. With the deployment of the Public Order Police members last year, we clustered certain sectors together, which did not follow the normal approach, because crime does not know boundaries. The robbers do not only function in this area and tomorrow in that area. They operate wherever crime is possible for them, where they see certain weaknesses. So when we deployed the Public Order Police members last year, we clustered certain sectors together, which was the same principle as Crackdown when we started in 2000 with Operation Crackdown, where we utilized the word zones instead of specific sectors or clusters as we're utilizing now. Another issue that we should say, we did not have enough people for every sector. Now, you can start counting. If you take the number of sectors and you would like to deploy four members per sector with two vehicles, you in actual fact need 16 because you took four shifts. So if you look at those numbers and multiply with the numbers of sectors, you will need far more personnel. However, not in all sectors you need four members, because in certain sectors, the crime levels are so low that it is not necessary to deploy those numbers. However, what we also now would like to do is to have specifically for each sector a number of reservists, especially your category B reservists, because that's your urban and rural safety reservists. Permanent members plus a number of reservists, and stagger the budget to such an extent that you call reservists up, not every week or possibly every month, but that you call up in terms of your crime patterns. If you look at social crime, the murders, the rapes, it starts Friday evening, Saturday, Sunday morning, it's over. If you look at Monday and the rest of the week, very low levels. Robberies, Monday morning, I think we looked at the time specifically 3-4 weeks ago, and we found the specific time even when you have the high level. Therefore, we came to the conclusion, even if you talk sector policing and shift, you can't have four on each shift, because some times of the day you have very low crime figures. Possibly you need to totally re-look your shift. That shift is not the normal shift that we are working. That you come on duty on 6 o'clock and you move 2 and you work 2:10 and every time you have a new sector team, that's possibly a business approach. It can work for, can I say, EFSA and Nedbank, and so it's a business approach. In terms of crime, it doesn't work like that. You deploy the biggest numbers when you have your peak. And therefore, we started to follow a different approach in terms of sector policing, to say, cluster some together, because if you look at the crime weight in sector 1 and sector 2, one may be very low, sector 2 may be a high one, so we started linking them, also because of the fact that we did not have the numbers to deploy in all those sectors, 4 per shift or 8 per shift, etc. However, with the new members being recruited, I mean, we're talking 2,995,000, and I'm sure when we reach 2010, we're going to be over 200,000 members. Plus, we link to that the reserve system, where we also indicated that at least 100,000 reservists. Once you get to those force levels, you can start following a different approach. You can even increase the sector. You can take existing sectors and cut them in 2 or 3. and deploy two in this sector with lower crime levels, eight in another sector where you have higher crime figures. So it's not really a fixed issue. There's no boundary of a sector which is fixed. It is something which you can modify in terms of your crime movement, etc. Was that the one, Mala?
Thank you, Chairperson. On the question of the in upgrading of police, do we provide funds for education? Yes, the kind of training that is provided within the police is two types. One is the in-service training, and we have 28 training institutions across the country where members are provided with all kinds of in-service training. And the second mechanism for getting training assistance to individuals is in the form of bursaries. But this is just not any kind of bursary in fields that members may choose to study. We identify, for example, the scarce skills or the areas where we need further training and development, and bursaries are then provided to members in those specific fields. On the question of the reduction in the detective training, you will notice that there in the 2005-2006 financial year, 1,138 detectives were trained in detective learning program, and there's 1,090 that's trained in the current financial reporting year. Now, our training in detective environment is informed by our training provisioning plan. When the presentation was made, they called it the TPP, when Commissioner Moorcroft did that presentation. And in terms of that, we targeted 1,000 detectives to be trained in the detective learning program. So an amount of 1,090 is actually slightly surpassing our target. But in specifically, why were we not able to maintain, for example, the same numbers that we had in 2005-2006? There were several reasons for that. Firstly, we revamped the entire detective learning program. Now, when we do that, we have to comply with SACWA standards, certain unit standards in those. And that the approval of those standards and the credits that are awarded for that is not done within SAPS. It's done by SACWA and certain, you know, requirements, and it takes time before they approve that. So that delayed us a bit. The second thing is we are in the process of a major upgrading of our Detective and Crime Intelligence Academy at Hammanskraal. Now, the Detective Learning Program, for example, is a 14-week residential program. And the upgrading process meant that some of our residential units, they were not available. We had to make arrangements and hire other buildings to accommodate members and then bus them to the college. That also impacted on our capacity to deliver there. And in the annual report just gives you one aspect of the detective learning program. But the detectives are trained, for example, in other programs as well. The stock theft, commercial crime, organized crime, serious and violent crime, the branch commander's training, which was slightly reduced, and the vehicle crime investigation. Now, for each year, the training provision plan addresses what are our priorities. So although detective learning may be low, there was increases in the other aspects of detective training. And in each year, we take into consideration what is our specific need, what are our crucial priorities, and then the training plan is developed in accordance with that. On the question of retention at our forensic science laboratory, I'm very surprised to hear that there is no strategy in place to retain skills within the forensic science laboratory. The first provision that we have made is we've identified certain areas within the forensic science laboratory as scarce skills. So those members receive scarce skills allowances based on the number of years of training required for them to become competent and the number of years of experience that they require in the field to develop competencies. The competition within the private sector for those kind of skills. We also make bursaries available to these members in specific areas where we require the skills. We have targeted recruiting at universities to attract the skills. We have registered an affirmative action program within the environment. We've conducted a job evaluation, and we actually pitched the entry levels within this environment at a higher than normal level within SATS. They are provided with lots of on-the-job training. We also get them, once we recruit them and we provide them with training, which comes very expensive, we let them enter into contracts with us. But let me just say that despite all these retention strategies, we are in no position to compete with major banks, with the private sector for these skills. And even though we may have something like contracting them in as a retention strategy, private sector institutions will just buy them out. And then we lose skills, and it takes us a long time to actually train people and get them up to that level. Thank you.
Seems that if you do have the questions, isn't it? Yeah, so respond on those that you have, and then we'll see then when you are finished which ones are still outstanding.
Jefferson, Colonel Barnard asked a question about the discipline on the people that escaped, that our members that are involved. We don't have the figures with us. We will provide it to the Jefferson to circulate it to you. And then in terms of the injury on duty of members, the National Commissioner have already alluded to that, but the South African Police Service takes full responsibility for all the medical expenses in terms of injuries on duties of our members.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think there are still three from my side. The cashier system was one. Where we previously had received monies deposited into the National Revenue Fund, and then when we receive monies, and then when we want to expend monies from the standing advances, we withdraw it again and then spend the monies. What we now do is, as soon as we receive it and we have a simultaneous need to spend, we discount the two against each other. We receive on the one hand, set it off against an expenditure, so we don't have to go through the whole process of depositing it and then again expending it. So it is a shorter system, less cash, and cash can be deposited into any bank account countrywide because monies are digital of nature. So this is in terms of the cashier system. I think there is... My colleague here.
Oh, are you listening to the response? You were not listening. Yeah, I mean, you can ask a question and then ignore the response. Yeah. All right, you may.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I would just go back to the revenue, and I'd take the revenue statement again. The first amount, line item, received, expended, R1, 1,000 rand over. Other revenue, what, 251, 858, 251. Collected to be surrendered to the revenue fund, and then you deduct the 4.2 million to get to the 247. I'm now taking a little bit of a long road. Then we got to the next, which is just basically certain aspects, the one referring to an outflow in expenditure, the other two referring the one to revenue to staff or the National Revenue Fund, and the other one referring to local assistance. And then the crunch of the question. Those were mainly main reasons for the increased collection, and we only indicated 34.5 million collected from firearm applications. To answer the member's question precisely, departmental revenue, the 251 million, consists of the following: sales of goods and services, other than capital assets, 136.828 million. The following category, fines and penalties and forfeits, 7.338 million. Then interest, dividends and rent on land, 1.807 million. Sale of capital assets, 1.352 million. And then also financial transactions in assets and liabilities, 104.533 million. Maybe in that slide, although we've only indicated reasons for main growth, we should have included all of it in order to promote the communication in this regard. I shall also provide this to the member. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Commissioner Mayor will answer the IJS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The integrated justice system consists of various programs between the departments of the South African Police Service, the Department of Justice, the Department of Correctional Services. It also includes the Department of Home Affairs. What we do there with that specific project is we have an interoperability program where we exchange information, we optimize the business processes between the South African Police Service, the Department of Justice, NPA, as well as the Department of Correctional Services. We are creating an electronic docket whereby the Department of Justice will receive that virtual docket, and it also includes the transfer of exhibits between the South African Police Service and the Department of Justice. The tenders are in process of finalization from a legal perspective, and some of them will be published within the near future. It also includes projects such as video arraignment, where bail postponements will be done via video conferencing facilities, so we don't have to transport any prisoners from either the South African Police Services or the Department of Correctional Services to a justice facility. Those postponements can be done by video arraignment, which will prevent the escape from criminals from prison, especially serious type of criminals. The first facility is in the process of being built currently in the Western Cape as well as in KwaZulu-Natal. And we also have an exchange of information in terms of identity management between the Department of Home Affairs, the Department of Justice, as well as the South African Police Service, in order to prevent criminals to exchange identity. If you're a serious criminal, you do change identity with somebody who has a lesser offense and who is currently being detained. The process is stems from as to where a crime is being committed. We take the whole IJS system through the investigation process. We take them through the justice process, we give the verdict on the system, we do the incarceration, and even the Department of Social Development is involved where it comes to offences where minors are involved in those offences. They can start off with rehabilitation of those minors as from when the crime has been committed. There is some 13 programs in the Program of Action Plan. It entails high technological capabilities that we have to import and implement within the various departments, and it is quite an extensive program, but it is due to the technology changes. Some of the challenges that we were faced with was with the data line capacity, the network infrastructure services that have to be provided by both CIPA, the State Information Technology Agency, as well as Telkom. I think that is, it's a process from cotton to cash with the various systems between the departments and the exchange of information in a nutshell.
Are all the questions?
That is one, Marikan. I don't believe this. I really can't believe this. That Marikan police station next to Rustenburg can say they don't have cars. For me, this, Madam Chair, I promise before the end of this day, I will get to Marikani. No, I will not physically go there. But I'm saying I will get into a system in my office which will tell me how many vehicles they have. They may complain that they have wrong kinds of vehicles because you can only use a 4x4 there. So if they complained about the kinds of vehicles that they have, I'm ready to listen, but to say they have no vehicles, it's something that I can't understand. There is no way. It's the first time I hear about it. I was speaking to the provincial commissioner this morning, last night. There was never a complaint about them not having cars. In reality, we don't keep cars at the headquarters of the police. We ask the provincial commissioners, we say, 1 point something billion has been allocated for vehicles. Western Cape, your share of this 1.1 billion is so much. KwaZulu-Natal, all of the provinces, you order the cars that you want. And you will tell us which are these cars, we will pay. And you will receive the cars yourself. Now, what happens in the police? And this is what I suspect with Marikan. Instead of buying a 4x4, which is the kind of car that you want to use there, you buy a Chico, a small Volkswagen. Because with one 4x4, you can buy three Chicos. So you buy the number of cars they are made. But they will not take you 1 year in a terrain like that. And then people then say, we don't have cars. I will check this Marikana thing. I can't believe they can say that they do not have cars. The other one was... domestic violence training. Sometimes... I don't know how to put this, but let me put it this way. We can have as many training programs. There are certain times where the training doesn't go in here. And you have to say, maybe let me find somebody else to train rather than this person that I have tried to train. It also goes with, we all come from this society where the men think that they own everything. Generally, in South Africa, all races. And we do have such a problem in the South African Police Service. We do have such a problem in our organization where people do not take their responsibilities when they are supposed to take their responsibilities in a manner that is consistent with what is demanded of them. So there may very well be lots of training courses which we take them through. It's just that it's not getting through. And so we then have to look at and say, who are these people that we are going to discount from this training program and look for people that still have got new ideas. And they say, I don't know, in English phrases, you can't teach an old dog what new tricks and so on and so forth. We do have such problems. And I'm the first one to admit, because as much as you receive these complaints, I receive them too, where people go and report the case and the policeman says, oh, he only slapped you once. You mean once? Mm-hmm. And you know, you come into open in such a big case. We do deal with those kinds of problems. We have a problem, Madam Chair. But it's a problem that we are at and we are working at and trying to get people to do the right things. Otherwise, we then have the numbers of the people that we must take through the disciplinary process increasing because they are not doing the right thing. Thanks.
I'm happy that members of the media are here. I was interviewed this morning about the same issue. And I'm even more excited because what National Commissioner is saying is exactly what I said this morning. It's not about training. It's about an attitude of individuals. When the heads of the ICD were here last week on Friday, I remember very well one of the heads put it in Sesotho very clear and said that a man would say, "Wasiba mulaona ile kwa basadi, warikrinya mulaona kwa basadi," because this legislation protects women. So they just take it for granted. Exactly what the commissioner is saying. When you go to a station, for instance, when a male go to a station beaten by a woman, they don't even take that case. They make you, they just laugh and say that you're a fool. How can a woman beat you up? Go back. You see? Yeah. So those are some of the things that I agree with commissioners. This is human beings, a human being. We are really faced with a very huge problem when it comes to that kind of a legislation. It's an attitude. It's not a matter of training now. I believe it is an attitude from individuals, yeah. then let us hear then from other questions. Give to welcome Honorable Khumalo. Before, and welcome Honorable Boy. Before I give to these two members, I just want to make sure whether all the question has been responded to. Annelies?
Listen, I've listened to the explanation tones of sector policing, but the second question on sector policing has not been answered. Just the impact, because this has been a huge cut, specifically in the Mpopo and Mpumalanga, what the impact there would be. I'm thinking specifically about rural areas and the specific crimes that one have in those areas.
Yes. I'm quite astounded that there's no information. We've had 1,408 escapes from SAP detention and SAP custody, and yet somebody's taken the decision to remove from your annual report details of disciplinary action taken against the members responsible. And really, if you don't have the information about the numbers of members and their suspensions and what it's costing, who took the decision to remove that information from the annual report? I mean, we should at least know that there are 70 SAPS members or 100 SAPS members suspended who were responsible and are behind the 1,480 escapes. That's what we're looking for.
Thanks. I think my colleague will try and answer the latter part of this question.
Fine, let us just take few and we can respond to those. Not forgetting that the outstanding question of Ms. Van Wegener. Let us take some few hands. I recognize Honorable Nyamezele Boy, Honorable Khoso Khumalo, and Honorable Annelies again.
Thanks, Chairperson. Sorry to be late. And good morning, National Commissioner. Good morning, my brother. What a question. You know, I am looking at the rising of civil claims, or not rising, but the claims that are being taken up against the police. And I'm looking at the number of cases that police are getting themselves involved and where police are dying on the streets. And I've just listened to your response on how you deal and how you're looking at the issue that is related to women. And in your response, you say there's something wrong with training and policy where people don't listen. Now, the chairperson, I've agreed with you. But with me, I've got a slight problem with that. Because I had asked you before about the management of the whole service system. What is it that is not going right? Is it that makes us to have this type of problems where there's a lot of civil claims against ourselves as the policemen? What is the problem? Is it in the conduct of the police? Is it in the training of the police? Where does the problem lie? I mean, I had asked the ICG to give us a response that at least explains to us with the type of problems that the police have and the type of situation that the police find themselves in. Does it mean that South Africa or South Africans should feel safe that the police does have the capacity to protect and defend the citizenship? I know that you are here, National Commissioner. You could be the one that could be giving us a qualifying statement that says South Africans must respect the police, because the police are doing a very good job. I had asked you the last time that Lala was here, I had asked him when we're dealing with the issue of statistics, that the way these statistics are coming across, it's more about conduct crimes, and most of the time it's cases reported to the police. It doesn't seem as if police themselves are able to work on detecting, or police themselves are going up and be able to work within the citizenship and bring people to the police station. What is the state of policing at this stage? Are we in a position to say to the broad South Africans that we do have the capacity to protect them during the 2010? I mean, like, is policing quite in a position to do that? And I must say, my one point, I'm sorry if you're my deputy commissioner has been responding to the issue of detectives. There's been a worrying aspect for me in relation to the detectives. Besides, when you go to different provinces or you go to different stations, you might just find that even here in Kokoletu, that the detectives are a distance away from the station itself. And when the policeman died in Godwood, there was a separation of them from the police station. Woodstock. Thank you. Now the question that we keep on asking ourselves, is this a pre-arranged arrangement within the service that the detectives are an island on their own? They have to be outside the main building of the police. And I have thought that if you want to deal with crimes, detectives are the core and they are supposed to be given the best that you could do with them. But that impression is the one that keeps on haunting me, that it seems as if there's no, caring that is being given towards detectives and the way they are being isolated from main policy. Let me understand that why is it that in different police stations, detectives are a distance from the station itself? What informs that? So that maybe I would understand it. I haven't been able to understand, but I thought that detectives are needed to be more nearer and inside in the station itself. I can give you the police station, Commissioner, if you don't have this.
It's a lot of them, so don't even try.
No, I just wanted to make sure that I'm not going.
Yeah, otherwise, it's going to really, it's a lot near me. Because, you've made a point that maybe there is something of an agreement or whatsoever. But we, as Parliament, when we visit provinces, we discover that it's not safe the way that the detectives are being accommodated far away from the police station. Mm-hmm. And we hope and believe that in these new stations that have been built now, planned to be built for the coming financial year, that detectives are to be accommodated at the same building as the police in uniform. Honorable Ndatekhodlo.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, there's an issue that relates to 243 million that has been given back to SARS. I'm not so sure if there's anything that we could do or that the SARS could actually make a recommendation that part of the money could actually be used to facilitate combating crime, crime prevention, dealing with serious crimes of women and children. I'm not so sure how that could be done, because I could just imagine why would we agree to send back 241 million of that money, when that money could actually be used to enhance policy. That's an issue that I think we have to deal with. The person, that part is about the issue of integration within the police force. I must tell you that I'm worried about the fact that when you've got a police station in each and every suburb in Johannesburg, Norwood Police Station, Hillbrow, Yeovil, Berea, this and that, in such an area, then you've got around about 45 police stations in Soweto. I thought at some point that would have moved in terms of trying to increase the number of police stations that we need to build. You would have Morocco, you would have Protea, stuff like that, maybe kept straight or kept out. But, that does not address the type of freedom that we have in those areas. Let alone the fact that in larger communities like Botabelo, you could have only one police station with a population of more than 200,000 people. And then actually you would have 4 to 5 of them in Bloemfontein. So that's something that I thought to deal with them. But coupled with that person, is there anything that relates to the CCTV that the police normally enter into contractual obligations to the municipal councils? Now, we could see them in Pretoria, in Tshwane, in Johannesburg, and in Cape Town. These CCTV are mostly based in the city center. They are not covered in the townships. But actually, the statistics could prove to you that most of the violence and serious crimes actually do take place in the townships. Now, I don't know why. Why is it that we also agree, accept that it must be like that? Because I think we're just perpetuating the very same apartheid type of laws that we had before that we need to repeat. So the matter that I think we would have to deal with, and the police themselves must deal with that, because the CCTV coverage of monitoring only happens in those areas, but it doesn't apply in Soweto, it doesn't apply in Kokoletu or Langa. It's only here. And then we get excited to say, we are dealing with crime, it is going down, but we are just only concentrating on the city center. Second, the issue of the integration, now back to that point. The training facilities in Bishop Lavis, which was necessarily meant for colored people, and partly now Africans are training them. It is good that I hear that they mentioned about the Temba, the one next to Temba, the detective services in Namaskar. They are quite good, and they've been upgraded now of lately. But I must tell you, some of those training facilities in the former Bantustan areas, even the barracks of the police, they leave much to be desired. For the fact that you still have police stations that are quite different, I can give you an example of barracks that's beyond. Most of the barracks in townships, they are just beyond the police station as you enter. be it in police room, be it in Carlton, but then your white policemen and women happen to be situated in much nicer, better place in town. I don't think it's correct. We must not accept that this thing must continue. I think we'll have to find a way to change them, tempers and those type of things. The last point, sir, I know I've spoken too much. The last point is on ICT training. With the development of broadband and ICT, information communication technologies, a lot of crime now is happening around those areas, whether it is by cell phone, by cyberspace, by computers, by any network, anything or whatever. I was just going to check how far are we dealing with the issue of training in particular around that and providing support to the police men and women out there, because one of the things that I am worried about is the issue of how do we compensate or mitigate for men and women who have to die fighting crime, sometimes have to kill in terms of fighting crime and still walk the street. Meet the relatives and friends and parents of those people who they might have arrested, put in jail or even killed. What type of support could we really assist those policemen and women who put their lives on the line on a daily basis to do that through the incentives, increment, give them better salaries, give them better facilities and actually make sure that they work much better. I am worried about them much more than us or the police commissioners here. Thanks, Dr. Sir. That's all. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Khumalo. Honorable Van Lek.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a question to the detectives. There's been an overall drop in terms of detection of contact crimes. I'm talking about the total number of contact crimes. Can you just give us an idea why this is the case? Why is this happening? Why do we see a drop in the detection of contact crimes? And I'm specifically saying it in reference also to the question that Mr. Boyes asked about the police going out into the communities.
Thank you very much, Honorable Van Wyk. I will give over to respond. And also I would like to just say something on what was said by Honorable Khoso on the issue of comfortable police stations and those that are not comfortable. In particular, when you mention whites versus blacks, yeah. And I would say to the National Commissioner, I wish all the Provincial Commissioner can be like the Provincial Commissioner of the Free State, Ntate Mashego. Because you go to Park Road, you go to whatever station that used to be occupied by whites, you get black women occupying those positions. And then you go to Mangaung, where it was used to be occupied by blacks, you'll get a white man seated there managing that station. I think also we must also put pressure on the implementers of the policy, which are the provincial commissioners, because in other instances, I don't think that they're doing enough. I just wanted to make that statement on what Honorable Khoso was saying. They differ from province to province, but it's a serious matter that needs to be attended to by national. Can I just get out this?
Can we answer? Thanks. Let me deal with the question about the litigation against the South African police and all of this. As I had explained last time that there were 9 big ones that made the amount look big. But I think we must all accept as South Africans that in the South African police service you are finding people who come from 2 major streams. And in this organization we are putting together these 2 major streams. Some of the people grew up knowing that the only way to extract information from a particular person is to slap him 3 or 4 times. You are putting this with the people who are trying to do these things in the new way that the government has directed. You are putting these 2 forces together and you are trying to make out of them 1 unified force. And we must accept that 10 years or 30 years in order to transform completely is not a very long time for an organization as big as this. Added to this, Madam Chair. We have put into the police 45,000 new people. New people. That were put into the police who are gaining experience as they work. And in many of these instances, people will make mistakes that will result in what we're talking about. Because we wanted to change the shape of this organization, we are putting 45,000 new people. I understand that as we grow and as we improve, the cases of litigation against the police are going to go down, and they are actually going down. It may very well be that the amounts look big because somebody demanded 900 million for whatever that happened. So I am convinced that we are in the right path of building an organization that will give the people of this country safety and security. There are, Madam Chair, many cases of things that the police that have done to prevent crime from happening, even serious crime, that you would not know of. Until we decide, we are going to tell you that this was going to happen at this place or at that shopping mall or at that place. There are many incidents that you don't know of. And we don't volunteer this information to say people were going to this place to go and do this. And so you may know about those cases where the criminals have succeeded, but you will not know about cases where the criminals were stopped from succeeding. If you are talking about crime intelligence and the role of crime intelligence in this, let me give you an example. Nobody would know that 9 o'clock last night, people had a massive bag full of counterfeit money in Jane Fair. And they were in Jane Fair, 9 o'clock last night. They were going to do money laundering because they are involved in drug trafficking. 9 o'clock last night, we stopped them. But that's not going to appear in any page of a newspaper that we did that. Had they succeeded, I would have been asked that question here. So I'm saying, there are many instances where we stop things from happening that don't get to know. Get to be known.
Before you get to another response, Commissioner, he wants to, the Honourable Member...
But I'm still answering his question.
The very same question.
Oh.
No. National Commissioner, I understand what you're saying. But you know, we've been fighting with ICT and fighting with the human rights organization. Are you saying to me in your response now, the certification for the record of human rights that is beginning to creep in versus the police, because... from what the ICD and the reflections about death in police stations and everything, what I'm trying to get to that, does this record get justified by the way you're presenting this type of analysis now? Is it what you're saying that there is justification because there are new people coming in, so police can go about breaking down human rights? Is it what you're saying? I'm just trying to get that clarity.
I would never say that. You would know better that I would never say that. I would never justify the violation of people's rights. Me. I would never say that. But I'm trying to give you an explanation of the litigation that you are talking about. It may never even relate to torture or all of those sorts of things. The majority of those claims, Jefferson, is vehicle accidents by the police. Driving. Then getting into someone else's house in Khayelitsha, driving into another car, knocking off a child in the street. That's the majority, the 7,000 that we're talking about. That's the majority. I'm not talking about torture and all of those things. Because we say if you come into the organization, you must have a driver's license. And you know, as I do, some people will cheat that system and we will discover after an accident has happened that this person did not have a proper life. I'm not justifying what the ICD and whoever is saying this, because I know that there are no instructions from the police that you must touch. And if they are found, they are dealt with immediately. Let me continue to say,
once a policeman or woman is suspended, he is suspended without pay. No one who is suspended in the police continues to get salary. So the immediate thing, once somebody is suspended, the salary is stopped. We will deal with the issue of the numbers that you are requesting, and we'll answer that question. But there is no money that is given to someone who is suspended as a member of South African Police Service. Can I say the country is safe? Of course it is safe. Let me prove. Next week, you will have the largest meeting in relation to 2010 in Durban, next week. In Durban next week, there is going to be the World Cup draw, where they say South Africa is going to play Argentina and so on. All of the teams that are going to participate in the World Cup, with their sponsors and everybody, they will be at the, what is that place? At the ICC in Durban. I assure you now, no incident will happen to any of the people that are going there that are VIPs, because we're putting measures in place. I assure you now, if anything happens, call me on Monday. Call me. We were at the 2020 cricket. What happened? No incident. So what is this that we must do to prove that we can do these things? I don't know, but I am saying there's a big event next week in KwaZulu-Natal. It will go very smoothly. Hundreds of thousands of people are coming to that event, and no incident, I tell you now, will ever happen. CCTV cameras or detectives away from the station. Please, can we all come from the past, and we must. This past must be fresh in our minds, all of us. It has been a tradition in the police, for example, let me give you one of the traditions, that the detectives will work months until what time? 12 o'clock on Friday. 12 o'clock. That's a tradition that comes here, which we found it. 12 o'clock, they stop, they get their, what is this thing? Clip, drift, and coke, police coffee. Meat, they go and roast. And they wouldn't do it at the station. As a result, not themselves, they do it themselves. As a result, it wouldn't be nice to do it at the station, so you have your office detached from that one, of the station, so that you can drive on Fridays and drink your cafeteria. That's what we found there. I entered the police station in, what is that place I told you? Where the police passed me, and he was having his glass of brandy at the back. And he passed me, I said, do you work here? What? Carolina. I said, do you work here in Carolina? And he said, who are you? What do you want here? And I go back, and when I reach the back, I found half a cow in the back of a van, half a cow with bottles of brandy, and they were drinking it Friday, the tradition that they came back from. We have done away with that. We have made sure that they work up till Saturdays. We have done away with that practice. We have to do away with this thing of dislocation of the detectives away from the police station, but it is going to take us time. We are working on it. All of the new stations that we are building, we make accommodation of the police, of the detectives, and the rest of the police in the same place. So it's not deliberate by the police. It's something that we are working on to improve the coordination between visible policing and those that are doing detective work. CCTV cameras. There is no project, take it from me, of the police that has put a CCTV in urban, any urban area. Urban by meaning in the CBD. None. All of our projects, CCTVs, They are in Kwamash, we put it there. They are in Nanda, we put it there. They are in Alexander Township, we put it there. They are in Halishiwe, we put them there. We put them there in Kailicha. These are projects of the police themselves putting CCTV. I can answer for business people who decide to put a camera system in a CBD. It's not me. But the police have put theirs in these areas. We have gone a step further, Madam Chair. Because to us, it doesn't make sense to put a static TV, CCTV. It's located in one place. After 2 weeks, all of the guys know that it's there. Otherwise, they use a sling and break it and so on and so forth. We have bought 350 mobile CCVT systems so that this police vehicle with this system can park at the corner of Ilof and whatever street and for a couple of hours do this work, and after we think that we have displaced the people, we can move to another point. We have got 350 which are going to come into use in all of the cities, moving from one point to another in order to capture the criminals that are involved in crime so that they can be arrested with a command center where these people could be arrested. So we have not put CCTVs in any urban area or in any CBD. The other questions, you want to answer them? Commissioner Kelly, about? Commissioner Munu, please answer the detection thing.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, thank you. If you look at the detection in the annual report on contact crimes, there was a reduction. Over the past years, we've been doing an audit on all cases that are open. And in the same process, we've been training commanders who were afraid to close dockets. You will see that our undetected cases in the last financial year grew. But that was because of the audit that we were doing. So we hope that we would now come to a stage where it will line off and that our detection, as from now, will sort of stabilize and increase. So that is the reason for the low detection in the last financial year, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions that have not been responded to?
Madam Chair, thanks. I don't think we had a look whether how big the sector is, whether it had an impact on the crime situation. However, can I mention something in terms of crime? And you can read it in the annual report, but to make it easy for yourself. Pretoria area, 28 police stations. The crime in Pretoria area is more than in the whole of Mpumalanga, Madam Chair, the whole of the Free State, the whole of the Northern Cape, the whole of the Northwest, I left out, and the whole of Limpopo. In this small area, more crime than you have in any of those five provinces. Secondly, the National Commissioner mentioned Gauteng. We're dealing with 40% of the crime in the country in Gauteng because of many reasons. So if you look at the combating of crime by means of sector policing, specifically your robberies and then your subcategories, your house, your business robbery, your robbery of a vehicle, etc. Your more social type of crimes, you can deploy hundreds of sector police members, not going to have an effect. The crimes occurring your Friday evening, your Saturday, Sunday morning, it's not going to have an effect because it's social of nature. If we talk about 18,000 murders in the country, and you think about deploying police to bring that down to 500, it's not going to work. You have to address the social conditions leading to that. Therefore, in many of those sectors, we need, in terms of reservists, category C reservists, professionals, social workers, the ones addressing the social conditions in a society, religion against crime and all those types. Therefore, no, we haven't looked at whether it does have an impact. But I checked the crime stats yesterday for the first 6 months, Madam Chair, and I can't say anything about it. But from that, it didn't seem that it had an impact. Especially not Limpopo or Mpumalanga or any of those provinces. Thanks, Madam Chair.
The next question is conditions of barracks. Madam Chair, if things went my way, we would have no barracks, especially single male or single female barracks. I know the history of this country. That thousands of people died to do away with single men's and single women's hostels. Because we had agreed then, all of us, that these are centers of inhumanity, of placing these people in the cage. It has happened with the police because maybe in our history, the police were not welcomed by the community, so they had to be kept in these cages where they are unleashed once a week to go and harass those that they are supposed to be protecting, to arrest and so on and so forth. Ordinarily, I have tried with my colleagues here to say, let's do away with the barracks. Let's build family units. And let's do policing in a way that will make sure that you don't import police to go and police a particular area away from their own residential area. In the final analysis, we can't continue to have a situation where you have Johannesburg being policed by police who come from Limpopo. And so they come from Limpopo, they come to police Johannesburg, then the organization must provide them with accommodation and so on and so forth, and transport to go back. That's migratory labor system. And the thing that all of us fought against, migratory labor system. So why don't Johannesburg be policed by Johannesburg police? People who come from that society. Why should we in the Western Cape go to the Eastern Cape and go and look for Xhosa speaking police to come and police the Western Cape? Why can't we do it from here? That would do away with the issue of barracks, which are essentially hostels, and bring about a situation where the police their own communities where they live. Now maybe this is an ideal we'll get in 2050 or 2070. But in the interim, Madam Chair, we're trying to turn the single quarters into family units where the resources allow us. I went to a barrack. The newspapers report, as they always report, Soshanguvi, they wrote, what is this thing? Brothel at the police station. So I went to go and see this brothel at the police station. And I got into the single quarters, ma'am. And as I walked in, there was one woman who was moving to the bathroom. And I saw her. I didn't stop her. I didn't ask her. This is a single male quarter. I demanded to know who has she come to visit, and it turned out she's an inspector who works there. And I asked this person, why did you allow your wife to come in? He says, she's a teacher in Limpopo. I'm an inspector in Hammanskraal. Schools have closed. She wanted to come and see me. And so when she came here, I talked to my friend, and he allowed me to use his room. So we're sharing this room together. Because, Commissioner, I have nowhere to go. I don't have the money to go and pay for hotel accommodation. This is the only home I have. And this is what was reported as a brothel.
I then from that day said, if I was in the same position, I would have wanted my wife to come and visit me at the place where I work. If I didn't have money to book accommodation, I would have put her in this thing. If this is what people call a prophet, so be it. Because it is inhuman to expect these people to behave like any other thing except human beings. I know the barracks are in a terrible state. And we need to do a little bit more, but the building part, as you know, we depend on another State Department. The headquarters of the police, when it's raining, we need boats to go to our offices. Me. When it's raining, the headquarters of the police, to go to my office, I need a boat or get big, long drum boots because water is filled like this. It's sewage, it's everything. I have fought since I was there for the building of a headquarters of the police where we don't have to swim when it's raining. It has not happened, Madam Chair. I've gone through 3 DGs of the Department of Public Works, 3, fighting this thing. It hasn't happened. So there are problems in dealing with some of these issues. I can only fight to a certain extent. Beyond that, there's nothing that I can do save to say pity we are at this level of development. Thanks.
Thank you very much, National Commissioner. I'm sure all the questions have been responded. Why are you off? Off, okay?
Chairperson, maybe there's a misunderstanding. We do have the figures available of people involved in escapees. I will give it to you. It's just that I doesn't have it with me today. In terms of the template that has been provided for the annual general report, we received it from the Department of Public Service and Administration, but we'll go back and verify why that specific part has been deleted now from the annual report. But safe to say, during the period of last year, our regulations have also changed. You'll see in the previous annual report, we have reported on Regulation 18 in terms of the various categories. Now it's in terms of the new regulations, in terms of Regulation 20. But that information is available, and I can make it available to the Honorable Gardner.
Madam Chair, let me just finish by, they reminded me of something about Mr. Boy's question about the detectives and the police station. One of the major considerations over these years was that the detectives were always located with the security police. Never at a station with a constable. So they were always located with the security police, where the security police will deal with whatever they are dealing, and they would work together with the detectives away from the police station. That's what we have inherited. There are 1,136 police stations in this country. To undo this, it means a lot of resources to relocate these people. But it's work that is underway. There are reasons why the detectives were always away from the station, because they were located together with the security police at the time.
Commissioner, you know, as I said to you, since 1994, we created police, community police forum to assist the police. And I'm saying to you, I heard what the gentleman said must respond to the question of detection and how policing is being handled in South Africa. That I have seen the statistics that say most of the time it's dependent on communities coming over to the station, not much being done by the police to assist. And in the response of Chris, it confirms my fears that it seems like there will never be a situation where the police they themselves take it upon themselves to assist in protecting communities. But the impression Prince is giving me when he deals with the issues of social crime, he says that will solely depend upon communities to be the ones that report those type of crimes or take responsibility themselves or transform society. That's what, in a broader way, I'm taking that, what Prince is saying. So it then says significantly, what would the police then be able to assist these communities about, you see? I know you have got a problem when there's a domestic violence taking place within the family, but I'm just saying, those type of crimes, what is it that you are trying to do to try to resolve those type of situations, rather than taking a response that says, lie on your back and wait until the communities come and report, then you'll be able to do something. And I'm still saying to you, National Commissioner, I accept your credentials, but the institution that you represent, does its record speak when it comes to human rights? I'm saying you say that we should accept the impression given by ICD that police themselves are more violent in the number of them killing, I mean, people in cells. In the number of, I mean, I look at the statistics of them dying. Does it mean, as an overall, what is it that it gives an image about the police themselves? So the number of them are increasing year by year of those that are dying. What is the state of things? Does it mean to South Africans that the police themselves are not able, don't have capacity to protect themselves? Or what is the situation? This is what I'm trying to get to, so that when you deal with policing overall, you are able to say these things that are happening, civil claims, dying of police, doesn't mean that police doesn't have capacity. Or does it mean that police, in the way we've constituted them, are not able to perform their own duties? So the South Africans, I mean, the VIP address that will take place in Durban, that can be what is protected. I'm dealing with the ordinary people. If I deal with a particular person in a squatter community, what I'm trying to get at, will those people at the end of the day be able to be told that feel safe that the police are here to protect you? That's all I'm trying to get
at. Dr. Moruti?
Let me touch on the last issue that was raised by my colleague about the protection of the VIPs. Will there ever be a time when we as ordinary South Africans will get the assurance that the commission is giving now, that the VIPs will be safe? He guarantees that there will be no incident. Now, for us ordinary people, for people who are crying day and night on the street, who are victims of crime, when will the commissioner be able to say to them, I assure you, this is going to happen to you. You will be protected when you have your own functions. And secondly, the call to members of the community to work with the police. We hear that all the time. But there are members of the community who are saying, why should I risk my life in doing that? Because when I report a crime, I find the police who's in cahoots with drug syndicates. And they say, so and so has reported you. And because of fear of being victimized, many are afraid to come forward. If you look at vigilantism in the Western Cape, for example, there's been a number of communities saying, we know this man is a drug dealer. We know that our children are getting drugs from this house. Police, help us. And nothing has been done. So what I want to know is, what more can members of the community do? If they claim to know the person, because they live in the area, and they say, please arrest this person. And they are not, the police are seen not to be doing that. And then they attempted, out of frustration, to take the law into their own hands, because they see the same person giving drugs to their own children. I mean, what must the poor people do? And then lastly, this I was told by a police inspector myself. He apprehended a car hijacker, I think for the third time. And this car hijacker said to him, Meneer, I want to be honest with you. You are wasting your time. The previous times you arrested me, I was begging the street because your colleagues are on my payroll. Now, a man like that said to me, should I still risk my life when my own colleagues are betraying me? So now, if you have this kind of corruption, is there any hope that we'll ever get rid of drug dealing in this country? Is there any hope of people, ordinary people, having confidence in the police that should be protecting themselves? Now, these are serious practical problems that we are dealing with on a daily basis. Because people are saying, we are being failed by the very people that should be protecting us. So I said to this police inspector, if this man is saying that to you, maybe think twice before you risk your life. because it is your own guys, your own colleagues that are selling you out. So it is a problem of corruption that I'm not sure whether you have an answer for. But I would be happy if one day we come to a stage where we can be given assurance as ordinary people. The assurance that's given to VIPs. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, you are the last one. I want to open for the only thing that I can allow you to do is just to pray for us. Otherwise, I won't really give you another chance. National Commission.
Madam Chair, the safety and security of the people of this country is the responsibility of all. It is my responsibility, having been placed in the position that I'm placed to do this. It is also your responsibility as members of Parliament. It is as much a responsibility of a taxi driver as it is a responsibility of a factory worker. All of us must work on this problem of crime in this country to reduce it. If all of us work on this, and I think this is what the President said many times, all of us do this. None of us become spectators in the fight against crime. I think we can give these assurances that you are asking for. But if it remains an issue, the police are seen as those police that you are dealing with the police, therefore, because you are dealing with the police, you are a target of our venom. Then we're not going to deal with this problem. Until we are accepted as members of this community, if I go into a lift in this building here, someone will not refuse to go into a lift because there are four people who are wearing uniform. And so I don't want to be arrested. Maybe it's said in jest. But the reality is, in the back of the mind, this is a force that is meant to oppress them at all times. Until such time we deal with this thing. Until such time that all of us are ready to put our shoulders to the wheel, we will be able to give this assurance that you're talking about. Now, you know, maybe we need a test. We say no policeman works for 2 days. 2 days. All of them. And after 2 days, we gather to look at the damage that will have been done. Maybe this is the extreme that we might go to. Because the things that we do every day to protect the people of this country, maybe we need a column where we will announce them every day, we protect so many people. But it is not going to help, because where is that budget going to come from? Where is it going to come from for us to have a propaganda and a TV station to sell ourselves? I'm saying this. Maybe we need not even 2 days, 2 hours, Madam Chair, on a Sunday when everybody has had his chicken and turkey. 2 hours from 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock. You agree with me, without organizing a strike. We simply agree to test this thing. We say all of them don't work. And at 6 o'clock we gather to make analysis of the damage in this country. It will be immense. No, we are going to continue to do our work. We are building the organization. We are preparing ourselves. We will continue to develop until we can give this country the sort of services that you want from us. We have no other interest other than to serve the people of this country. This is not a job that is very soft and easy. We work all the time in the interest of the people of this country, not in our own interest. Thank you.
Madam Ruth.
The Commissioner did not address what I raised, particularly about members of the community who say, we know our children are given drugs in this house. Do something about it. And the police don't seem to be doing anything about it. They only act when frustrated members of the community seem to be taking the law into their own hands. So what do you do when members of the community are saying, this is the house, this is the man, and then that person is not arrested, so nothing's done about it?
Madam Chair, can I finish this question once and for all? After you said, this is the house where my children get the drugs from, I must have evidence. What you are telling me is intelligence, it's not evidence. I need to get evidence that this is the house that is selling the drugs, so that when I act against this person, I can go to court, we can go to court and prove the case and the person is sentenced. You know, one Christmas day, I was called by a revered leader in this country, who called me and says, Jackie, go and arrest so-and-so. Now, this is somebody you don't defy. Go and arrest this person on Christmas Day. And I'm in Johannesburg, this person is in Mthatha. I'm giving instructions to go and arrest him. So I have to say, but we need evidence of whatever allegation you have. There must be evidence. Not because I can't say you are lying to me, you as you, that this person has done wrong, but I need evidence in order to carry out your instructions to arrest this person, and we must go and prove the case. Commissioner said, how long did it take us to prove the case? 18 months. 18 months to get the evidence that ultimately we are able to arrest this person and we can prove the case in a court of law. Now, somebody who is reporting a case such as you are saying is somebody like someone who has got a toothache. He is not waiting for Novocaine to be put in the tooth, wants the tooth to be extracted at that time. But for me to extract that tooth, I need evidence. On many occasions, we have received this kind of information, that house. But we need to get evidence so that when we act against this person, we are not arbitrary. So, what must you do? Give us the information, we will verify the information, we will act on the information. If after 2 months or 1 month we have not acted, you can come back and say, National Commissioner, I gave information about a drug house in such and such a place. I want to see what has happened. I will respond to you within 1 hour, because that's my job. But what we report, police can't act on it immediately because we will have so many litigation cases if we act without getting the evidence that this person has done something wrong. On Friday, the amount of women who go to the police station and report assault by their husbands is very big. On Monday, the same, some percentage, big percentage, goes back to the police station and says, I withdraw the case. I withdraw the case. Why? Maybe the husband forced her. Maybe the husband said, you are not going to get money for food. What must this policeman do? Can he say, despite the fact that you are withdrawing the case, I'm going ahead? You need somebody who will give evidence in court in order to win the case. We're not having military kind of junta court. We're having a court where we must argue the cases in order to win the cases. Madam Chair, we will do all what is necessary to do our best in order to protect these people. If we don't, we don't deserve to be wearing this uniform. We might well as go and look for a job in an export-import company and stay there. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm Tate Murudua, we're in Mosham. We're seeing you.
No, just us. Kafi.
Okay.
If members of the community, for example, can have on video the transaction, or a child coming out of that drug house with drugs, would that be sufficient evidence?
Commissioner, please don't respond to that question. Please.
It's not evidence.
No.
Madam Chair, let me just deal with him because it's not evident. How do I know that child went with the drug inside that house, comes out, takes the drug out of his pocket and say, here are the drugs that I got into that house? I need more than just that in order to get evidence to convict that person. And to take somebody, you've got to go through processes. For us to take anybody, we've got to go and apply to a judge and give the judge reasons why we believe that we need to put you under surveillance. And only if that judge has given us a written thing can we do it. So you're not going to get members of the committee moving around with movie cameras and filming everybody because they are, you make the laws. You make the laws. They are in breach of the law. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. You know, Commissioner Price, in my meeting, if the question is addressed to the commissioner, I would like the commissioner's response without any interference from yourself. When a question is directed to you, and then you respond without any interference from any police officer, I feel very much annoyed when members of parliament are asking questions and then you kept on laughing as if they are stupid. Please, in my meeting, stop that. Please, stop that. Thank you very much, members of parliament. Thank you very much, members of the police. We must confess that, Commissioner, that on the issue of the building of the police stations, we must really say that most of the new stations that we visited as this collective, to mention a few, I think it's Halishewe, it's one of the best police stations that is totally utilized. Because in other instances, you get a beautiful big stations with all the resources, but not 100% utilized by the police. So I think, to be honest, there is a good that is being done by members of the police. We know that, unfortunately, it's human nature, but in some instances, the bad things mostly are those that we mostly highlight more than the good things that the police are doing. But in some instances, I must confess, we don't want to let people run away from South Africa because they're afraid that there's no policing in South Africa. There is policing in South Africa, but we would like to see the police doing more than what they're doing at present. Thank you very much. And then I would also like to apologize from CETA. We're supposed to have done CETA too after the police, but I never predicted that this is going to take so long. I'm sorry for that, but please stay over for tomorrow. The meeting will start at 12 tomorrow so that we can start with you just for an hour, after which then we'll take the ICD for the remaining 2 hours. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Tomorrow.
What is Matthias? The workshop is also for the workshop. No,
I'm
Pretoria's dining code is 012, right?
Yes.
Hundred.